Today we're going to talk about feeling incompetent. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever done anything where you feel really incompetent. I feel that way most of the time, so I'm pretty good at describing this. You know, I remember somebody said to me, well, maybe you are called to be a pastor a long time ago. And I said, you're kidding. I thought they were joking. And I said, at that time, I was probably second year of college or something. I said, you know, I that's not ever going to happen because I don't like pastors. They're lazy. And they're whiny. And they're vain. And they all pastors that I had ever met suffer from JPN syndrome. Oh, I'm getting some blanks on that one. JPN syndrome, just plain nuts. Yeah, that's what I'd come up with. So, but then after a while, I said, okay, I'll try it for a few years and see once. And I was surprised that I liked it. I liked the people I ran into, and I liked the work. And I actually still like it, which is a good thing because I spent most of my adult life doing it. And I'd do it again. But I felt like Moses at first. Gave every excuse possible to get out of it. I don't know if any of you ever been faced with a task that seems insurmountable. You'll say things like, well, I don't know how to do that. Or I can't do that. And sometimes you simply don't want to. But sometimes we simply feel overwhelmed and we get what is called the imposter syndrome, which is, according to the dictionary, a psychological pattern of persistent self-doubt and fear of being exposed as a fraud, despite evidence of competence and success. People with this syndrome struggle to internalize their achievements, attributing them to external factors like luck rather than their own skills. It's not a clinical diagnosis, but a common cognitive distortion that can lead to anxiety, burnout, and hinder one's potential. And probably most of us have had imposter syndrome at one point in our lives. Moses definitely had it. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, the pyramids are an important part of the story of Moses because it's believed that they were constructed by the people of Israel when they were residents of Egypt. Now, I'm going through the Old Testament the way I am for the next few months, and then over the next year, I have one goal for this congregation. I decided that I'm going to try and make you all into Bible scholars so that if you hang with me and you come to on Sunday mornings and you come to the adult Bible study I'm going to do next month, you attend all those things, I want you to have the equivalent of a master's in biblical studies. I'm going to push it that way. I want you to be experts that way. When somebody talks about a rapture, you know how to handle it. When somebody has all those other issues, you know how to handle it. And that's what I want to do. Now, with these Bible parts, the easiest way to do this is to take notes and have in your head, in your mind, that you're going to present this material to somebody else. And so if you jot down notes in that way that you're planning on presenting the material to somebody else, you'll get more out of it. Now, you'll be looking down, and so I won't be able to make as much eye contact with you, but hey, I'll get over it. Because I want you to, you know, get as much out of this as you can. So, background for today. Jacob, who was later named Israel, and his family moved to Egypt. What had happened is there was a famine, so Jacob ended up going in and with his kids, moving to Egypt. Now, Joseph was one of Jacob's kids. He is the son of Rachel. Remember, I've been talking about the story of Rachel and Leah, the two daughters of his uncle Laban, his cousins. He wanted to marry Rachel, but his uncle stuck Leah in there first, and then he got Rachel too, so he had two wives that were his cousins. And Rachel had a kid named Joseph. And Joseph was the favorite of his dad. You know, and all of us who are parents, we know we have favorites from time to time. I always say my favorite child is the child that lives closest to me, the one that's in closest proximity. So since all of my children right now are more than 10 miles away, I don't like any of them. But that's kind of the way it is. And Joseph was definitely favored by Jacob. So the brothers didn't like that. Joseph came out wearing his fancy coat, you know this story. He was captured by his brothers, put into a well, and then sold as a slave to Egypt. And he was liked by Pharaoh. It's a long story, but eventually he becomes an important man in Israel. One of the pharaohs, the kings keep dying off. One that came in, didn't like Joseph, didn't like the Jewish people. So he turned them into slaves. And for 400 years, these folks were slaves in Egypt. The pyramids were likely built by these slaves. And people got phenomenally rich from doing it because, of course, you don't pay wages to slaves. It's kind of like the big tobacco plantations in Virginia. Still today have these massive mansions, and that money's been passed on for generations. They made their money buying and selling slaves and buying and selling tobacco. And, just think of that. Free labor to raise something that's addictive. Of course you're going to get wealthy. And they certainly did. So there's all these different pharaohs that come along, all these different kings. And we get to Exodus chapter 2, and that's where we're going to start today. Years passed, and the king of Egypt died. But the Israelites continued to groan under their burden of slavery. They cried out for help, and their cry rose up to God. God heard their groaning. He remembered his covenant promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He looked down on the people of Israel and knew it was time to act. Now, from this paragraph, we learn sometimes you just have to cry out. In your misery, cry out. God hears your suffering, even when it seems that he doesn't. As this passage says, he remembered his promises, not just to Moses, but to Moses' ancestors. And God was setting things up. These are the ancestors of Jesus, probably 1,800 years prior to his birth. It's pretty amazing when you think of it. So then we get to Moses, and he's kind of an interesting guy. When Moses was born, the Pharaoh at that time thought there were too many Jews. So the young girls he let live because girls were considered property. He didn't care if the Egyptian boys married the Jewish girls, but the Jewish boys had to go. So he commissioned the midwives all over Egypt that if a Jewish woman had gave birth to a boy, she had to kill it. It's just that simple. So Moses is born. His mother doesn't want to do that, of course. So she puts him in a basket, sets him on the Nile, the river, which flows past Pharaoh's palace. Pharaoh's daughter is bathing in the river. I didn't think that was possible because I thought there were crocodiles in that river, but she's bathing in the river. She finds him and raises him. But Moses figures out that he's Jewish over a period of time, and he sees one of the slave drivers abusing one of his fellow Jews. He gets in a fight with it, and the slave driver ends up getting killed. So Moses has to flee from Egypt, like his ancestor Jacob had to flee from his own brother. He ends up in Midian, which is north of the airways, and marries the daughter of a guy named Jethro. So he's taking care of Jethro's sheep, and that's where we get to Exodus 3. One day Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. This is amazing, Moses said to himself. Why isn't this bush burning up? I must go see it. Well, see, the confusing thing here is the priest of Midian. It had to be a pagan priest that his father-in-law was. But then there's a burning bush that didn't burn up. Well, that would catch my attention too. So when the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called him from the middle of the bush. Moses, Moses, he replied, here I am. It's just like Jacob at Bethel, remember last week? Here I am, Lord, reporting for duty. And then, do not come any closer, the Lord warned. Take off your sandals, for you're standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he is afraid to look at God. Isn't that interesting? First of all, the obvious thing about this is if you're really going to worship biblically, you have to have bare feet. All right? No, that's not true, but bare feet's okay, Symphony.
I know.
All right, good. Now, the people of this day didn't wear socks, of course. Socks weren't going to be invented for another 3,000 years. But these folks thought this was the right way to worship. And then he covered his face just like Adam did after the first sin. So it's just a matter of respect that they took their shoes off in those days when they were on holy ground. And I don't care if you wear shoes in here or not. I refuse to have a dress code. But that really doesn't have a lot to do with what we do here. So as the passage goes on, it says this. Then the Lord told him, I've certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I've heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering, so I've come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, a land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. It's really fun to read that last sentence. The important thing that you get out of here is that God hears. He's listening. He's aware of your suffering. He's aware of any suffering any of us have. And the passage goes on. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I've seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I'm sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt. But Moses protested, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people out of Egypt? See, that was his first objection. To report for duty. Moses did, but not all duty. See, sometimes we don't want to. So we make excuses. We create this imposter syndrome in all of us. Well, God had an answer for Moses. God answered, I'll be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you'll worship God at this very mountain. Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? See, that's an important thing. We think it's kind of goofy today if we'd hear that. But there were so many gods in Egypt. I mean, they were a dime a dozen. There's all kinds of different fake gods in Egypt. So Moses wanted to know what to call them, but I think Moses was probably stalling here a little bit too, because he really didn't want to go to Egypt. So God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel. Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my eternal name, my name to remember for all generations. See, in Hebrew, when you say I am, it sounds like Yahweh. Folks, Jehovah is a mispronunciation. what happened was in the early days of making an English Bible instead of just a Latin one, they had the German Bible right there, because Germany beat England to having their own translation. In German, the Y is pronounced, or in English, the German Y is a J, you know, like my great-grandpa was John, only everybody called him Jan. The Dutch is the same way. And so, you know, the German W is like the English V, you know, as in Volkswagen. You know, Volkswagen, VW, it's the V is an F and the W is a V. And that's why it got done that way. So Jehovah's wrong. Don't tell that to a Jehovah's Witness. They won't like that. But that's in the King James Bible, and, you know, has to be that way. Yahweh is the proper way to pronounce it, and that's just the way it is. And I know I'll get some email on that. But Moses pleaded with the Lord. Oh, Lord, I'm not very good with words. I never have been, and I'm not now, even though you have spoken to me. I get tongue-tied, and my words get tangled. Then the Lord said to Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or do not speak? Hear or do not hear? See or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I'll be with you as you speak, and I'll instruct you in what to say. Well, Moses really had his excuses, didn't he? He didn't want to do public speaking. And how many times have I heard that? Oh, I can't do public speaking. Or, oh, if I'm going to do public speaking, I have to imagine that everybody's in their underwear. Well, no, don't do that. Problem with that is it doesn't help. See, you got to get over yourself and think about your audience. And then any flightiness that you might have dissipates right now. It's not about you. It's about who you're talking to. See, and Moses was too full of himself to think about his people. So then Yahweh reminds him of who created. And he goes on. But Moses again pleaded, Lord, please send anyone else. Then the Lord became angry with Moses. All right, he said. What about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he speaks well. And look, he's on his way to meet you now. He'll be delighted to see you. Talk to him and put the words in his mouth. I'll be with both of you as you speak, and I will instruct you both in what to do. See, Moses simply didn't want to leave, and the Lord became angry. Anger comes from unmet expectations. The Lord wasn't sure he was going to act the way he was, the way Moses was going to act the way he was, but the Lord finds a way. As I said last Sunday, he factors in our stubbornness, our insecurity, and even our stupidity. So here we go. Aaron will be your spokesman to the people. He'll be your mouthpiece. And you'll stand in the place of God for him, telling him what to say. And take your shepherd's staff with you and use it to perform the miraculous signs I have shown you. Miraculous signs with a shepherd's staff. You know, this shepherd's staff would turn into a snake when he threw it on the ground. That's not the big miracle. The big miracle is God gave Moses the ability along with the calling. And he'll do that for you too. Especially if you don't feel qualified. Yeah, you know, as I've already said, I often feel unqualified to be a pastor. Those ordination vows, when I had to repeat those, blew me away. Because most of the time, I don't know what I'm doing. And it took me a lot of years to admit that. See, the curse of getting a doctorate is you find out how much you don't know. And that really hit me hard. But here's what I do know. Is that if you are called to a specific function, specific task, Yahweh gives enough gifts to get you through. So your calling, let's think about that. Figure out what it is. As you already know, Yahweh has gifted you with the ability to do it. For some it's a teacher, some it's a leader, some it's an administrator, some a caregiver. But just know that once you start, your worst enemy is going to look at you in the mirror every morning. The devil wants your destruction. He's going to do everything he can to get you to fall. He wants you to waste your life. And he'll try to convince you that you can't do what God's calling you to do. But you can do it. Report for duty. My last year of seminary, there is a big shortage of pastors in the Reformed Church. So they had a job fair for pastors in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. There's about 30 churches within 100 miles that were without pastors. So I went with one of my classmates. We drove out there. And I got a handful of requests for a second interview. So when it came back to Holland, I said, I don't know. I was talking to one of my teachers. I don't know. I really don't want to do this. I don't know if I can. And, you know, he did one of those snorty laughs when I said that. And he said, here, think of it this way. There's a hungry horse, and there's three bales of hay. By that time, three churches are going to make me an offer. And so there's three bales of hay. It doesn't matter which one you eat. Just pick one and eat it. Well, that means that if you see something that needs to be done, just go do it. The skills will come. That's true with everything. If you see something that needs to be done, just go do it. That's probably how God calls you. So take a risk and experience the deep joy that comes from service. Report for duty. And you'll see good results. Let's believe this good news and live in peace. Would you pray with me, please? Lord, my prayer is that each one of us runs into a burning bush. That you speak to us clearly and tell us what you need us to do. I'm thankful you're not asking me to bring slaves out of Egypt. But you are asking me certain specific things, just like you are everyone in this room. So make it clear for each one of us what you're calling us to do. Give us the eyes to see it and the will to do it. So this is the blessing we ask for. Amen.